Sports Commission. And in respect for the long day that you folks have had, I'm going to be brief. I want you to know that there's two documents that I've given you. In the old days, when we had a little larger agency with staff, we would produce this biennial report to the legislature, and it's a summary of the major facilities that the legislature has funded through the Amateur Sports Commission, such as the Holman Cullen Ski Jump and Representative Peterson's district. And it's a summary of all the grant programs. And then there's a smaller document, which is a document that I want to walk through today, which will get you up to date on where the Amateur Sports Commission is at. And you at your leisure can look through the larger document to see the record of the agency activities in years past. So first of all, if you turn to the second page, the three goals of the Amateur Sports Commission have remained the same since our inception in 1987. Create economic impact through amateur sports. Prior to 87, it was not widely recognized that amateur sports was legitimate economic development or activity. But today, when you see an event that our agency has created in Blaine, Minnesota, the Schwann's USA Cup, this event has 16,000 youth soccer players with their parents. Usually it's two parents per kid that comes. There's almost 40,000 people who are part of this event. And last year, the National Association of Sports Commission voted this the number one sports tourism in the nation. This event alone brings in over $30 million into our economy. So that's number one goal, create economic impact through amateur sports. Second goal is to create more opportunities for Minnesotans. Every time we build a facility in Minnesota, not only does it bring in out-of-state tourists, but many Minnesotans and their families get to participate. And then the third goal is to be a national leader, which we believe we've accomplished. Now, go to the next page. You'll see two bar charts. The top one is the attendance on the collection of facilities that you as a legislature have funded. This includes the John Rose Speed Skating Oval, in Roseville, Minnesota. It includes a whitewater kayaking site in Carlton, Minnesota, near Representative Yarros' district. It includes the Bloomington Holman Cullen Ski Jump, National Hockey Center in St. Cloud, and the biggest facility is the National Sports Center in Blaine, also includes National Volleyball Center. You can see how prior to the creation of the commission in the 80s, Minnesota did not have these major facilities, and now we're averaging almost 5 million Minnesotans and outsiders that enjoy these facilities. Now, most important to the legislature is the economic impact. You'll notice at the bottom is the out-of-state dollars. And I want to just make one point here. Sometimes you as a legislature, people come to say many different projects. If you build it, this economic impact will be generated. Many times it's pretty hard to verify if that economic impact will ever occur. But I want you to know, and I want you just to think about this for a moment. When we have a ski jump event in Bloomington or a whitewater kayaking event or an event as big as the Schwann's USA Cup, we have 16,000 registered kids. All these participants are registered. We know that there are 20 teams from Colorado, that there are 15 teams from New York, and the economic impact that we run off these events. There are many events of, to use an example, if there was the Hopkins Strawberry Festival, they may say it gets 5,000 participants. You don't know where they come from. Some people speculate at a professional sporting event in Minnesota that so many people came from out of state. It's often impossible to verify. All of our amateur sport events, because the kids and families are registered, it's all verifiable. So these numbers are rock solid, and it shows the type of dollars that are coming into Minnesota every year. Now, if you turn the next page, I'm going to compare two graphs in one. If you look at the line that's going north is the economic impact approaching $70, $80 million a year. And then if you look at the inset graph, this is the state funding of the Amateur Sports Commission, where the high water mark was almost $600,000-$700,000, but starting in 2003, it was set at $300,000 a year. And so your return as a state has been growing, but it's flattening out a little bit. And then if you look at the line at the bottom, that reflects the small percentage of investment that the state has made and the big return of getting out-of-state visitors. So, and at the end of my presentation, we'll talk about the agency recommendation for this coming biennium. Now, go to the next page. I want to ask the committee chairman of the agencies that come through this committee or other agencies in state government finance, how many this year are coming to you with a plan to have the agency not receive any more state general fund dollars? Probably not too many. We're in a very special class of agencies that we're creating a plan of this land lease opportunity where the proceeds of the lease will fund the agency. And I want to make the point that the governance stays the same. You as a legislative committee and a legislature still determines how you want the money spent, whether you want it given to another agency or ours. But we've come up with a formula. Now, I want to just go through this because this was a very big topic in the last two legislative sessions. And I want to go over, give you an update. This is a very important topic. The goal of the land lease opportunity was to achieve an annual lease payment that would go for up to 90 years. It would also enhance the National Sports Center as a sports tourism destination, and it would achieve some capital improvements for the facility as part of this development. Now, the agency did a public bidding process where three big companies were the finalists. Frauen Shoe Companies of Minneapolis won the bid. They are putting a proposal that would include a 500-room hotel, a water park as big or larger than the one at the Mall of America, an IMAX and other movie theaters, a sport and fitness center, sports conditioning. These businesses would all pay their fair share taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, and they would provide an annual payment through the Amateur Sports Commission to the Department of Finance and to the state. And it would effectively take the agency off the state general fund budget, and this agency would self-fund. It involves leasing 16 acres. There is a non-exclusive easement that our agency would provide for parking that would serve both the leased area and some additional soccer fields. And if you're wondering where it is at this present time, we've been negotiating with Frauen Shoe for the past 6-7 months. Hopefully the negotiations will be complete in the next 2 months. But the Attorney General's office is involved in all of those negotiations, and the goal would be that we would have something signed by July 1st. And I'll get back a little bit later. Now, if you turn to the next page, many of you have been to the National Sports Center, and you can see here the map of the National Sports Center includes the world's largest soccer complex, world's largest ice arena. In the last 6 months, we've added 4 sheets, no state dollars, financed by local communities and private dollars. So we have the world's largest soccer complex, world's largest ice arena complex, probably the best and largest youth family golf course in the country. Now, you'll see the gray area, which is the least 16 acres. You'll see the parking area, which is a non-exclusive easement that the Attorney General's office has worked out, where those improvements would serve both the development and our soccer fields on the north. Now, the development is getting so large that Frauen Shoe Companies is going to acquire private land that is not part of the National Sports Center. You'll see the red area, and they're actually looking at acquiring more property, which will improve the area. And if any of you have been to the National Sports Center, to a major hockey, soccer event, one of the biggest deficiencies that we've had in the North Metro is lack of hotels right in Blaine. People stay all over the Twin Cities, but a major hotel on site will make this even a more attractive sports tourism destination. Now, to conclude my presentation, the final sheet here, just to let you know, what the agency is recommending as a minimum is what we've had as an appropriation over the last several years, $300,000 a year to maintain the basic agency staff. If you feel that you want to create more economic impact, we would appreciate an event development position, which would bump it up a little bit. And I think Representative Krantz has introduced a bill that reflects that agency request. And if all goes well and the lease agreement gets executed, that these funds will be covered by the lease payments and they will not affect your budget. Now, the concern is...
Can you do it by April 1st?
Well, we hope so. The concern is that we don't want a situation where the legislature would not appropriate the minimum amount, and then for some reason the lease was delayed, the agency would go out of business in the interim. And we'd like to think that you'd want to stick with us in good faith as an agency trying to create its own revenue source and not strand us. So that is a quick executive summary of where the agency's at, and in respect to the long day that you've had, I'm happy to answer any questions, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Peters.
Paul, what's the reality of getting the throw and shoe deal done in this marketplace?
Chairman Yaros and Representative Peterson, well, from the time and effort that we've seen Frauenshoe invest in this project, they've estimated they've spent $300,000 on transportation studies, environmental studies, that we think that they are completely serious. I think the only variable is whether we get a lease agreement in April, July, or August or September. I don't think it's whether it's going to happen or not. Put yourself in their position as a developer. They want to make sure that all of their studies are complete and they have a city building permit before they sign a 90-year lease with the state of Minnesota and have a 90-year obligation. They want to wait until they've got the green light and then they're going to execute the agreement. So that's where we're at right now.
Yes. Well, Paul, does it hang in any kind of a participation on the part of Anoka County or city planning? Some element there that has to get approved, a TIF or some kind of a tax abatement or something? You're aware of?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, it's, I would say, 90% the normal city building, planning commission building permit approval process. Frauenshoe, there is one road, 105th, which is currently a county road, and the county wants to give it to the city. The county and the city are in discussion over that, and Frauenshoe has talked about if there could be some TIF investment into the upgrade of the road, but it's never been presented as a requirement, only as a desire. So,
thank you. Further questions? Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Sorry about the delay.
No, it's.
I believe somebody asked to leave from your group. Is that right, Mr. Redman? Oh no. Okay.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. That's about 15 minutes.
So the Minnesota Zoo will be the next.
Nice and brief.
Yeah. It is.
Hello. This is very exciting. Thank you very much. For the record, if you could please introduce yourself, and we'll get started hearing your testimony.
Sheriff, I'm Lee Emke. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Zoo.
Peggy Adelman, Chief Financial Officer of the Minnesota Zoo.
Great. A brief?
I'm sorry. Is there? No.
Good evening. Thank you. I want to give a brief overview of the zoo, our operation, a little bit of history. I'll try to keep it to a minimum of history, a little bit about where we're headed, and then Peggy will detail our specific requests for the upcoming year. I think there's still a number of people that I run into. I've been at the zoo for 6 years now. I run into people who still talk about the new zoo. Mm-hmm. If you actually look back in time, the beginning of the Minnesota Zoo started back in 1966 with the initial efforts to develop a statewide zoo. In 1969, legislation was passed in this body to fund the creation of the zoo, and the zoo opened in Apple Valley in 1978. So we're actually approaching our 30th birthday, and although relative to some older city zoos, we are think, no longer new, but we're in a very interesting revitalization phase right now of our operation. The zoo attracts about 1 million guests annually. About 200,000 of those are from greater Minnesota, so we believe we are clearly serving the entire state as a recreational area, but also for our education and conservation missions, which I'll speak to in a bit. We have a very a strong and growing membership base, 33,000 households, which represents about 120,000 people. Our outreach includes our website, which has become increasingly popular. Last year, we had about 1.2 million hits on the website, so we're seeing a lot of people who may not be visiting the zoo but are using us as a resource. We have over 1,000 volunteers who spend time at the zoo and have donated now over 2 million hours of time over the period that the zoo's been in operation that really provide a lot of guest amenities and education that we otherwise couldn't do. The zoo staff has remained steady over the years, despite the fact that we've significantly added to the operation in terms of facilities. We currently have about 215 permanent staff at the zoo, equaling about 193 FTEs. And our budget. The zoo's budget this year is about $17.5 million. And there's been an interesting change in the funding for the zoo over the years. When we first started, and for the first decade or so of the zoo's existence, we received more than 60% of our total budget from the state appropriation. That's now dropped to about 36% if the governor's current budget is adopted. And the remainder is earned income through a number of revenue streams at the zoo, as well as a stronger contributed income line. Right now, that's about 7% of our budget, and it's growing with our partner, the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, which is our support operation. Why have a zoo? I think beyond the obvious that it's sort of an expected amenity for a major state or city. We really are focused on the conservation mission and the fact that we have 1 million people coming to the zoo for fun, but who are then in a position to learn something about the environment and take those lessons and apply them at home. We recently recrafted our mission as a part of a strategic planning exercise, and we've come up with, we think, a very straightforward mission statement, which is to connect people, animals, and the natural world. And that's everything we do goes towards that mission and in a number of ways. Again, I talked about our education work, our conservation activities, and the fact that we are a recreation facility. It's hard to separate those three stools of our legs of our stool. Everything we do really does blend those three missions together towards our strategic goal. Our education activities reach about 80,000 to 100,000 kids a year. School trips, obviously, coming from all over the state. I believe Peg can share a great graphic we have, which is a map of the state with information about visits, you know, which counties have had school trips visiting the zoo, as well as where we have gone and taken the zoo to them. We have a significant outreach program called Zoomobile, which brings educators and animal collections out to just about every county in the state over a period of a couple of years. A whole host of other educational activities at the zoo. Zoo Camp, one of the most popular activities we provided for a number of years. Our monorail is an educational tour of the zoo. We've been working with more and more partnerships to bring school groups from underprivileged areas of the state to see our facilities. We're currently working with the Mayo Clinic on some interesting initiatives. So our education mission really is something that we're realizing that partnership is critical to making it happen. The other education that happens at the zoo is the general visitor, our million guests a year who see our dolphin show or bird show are having fun. They're recreating, but they're also, in the soft way, receiving some education as part of that activity. I mentioned the change in our revenue stream, how we've gone from being largely state-supported to today being largely self-supporting, and we've done that by being quite entrepreneurial and adding a number of revenue-generating programs at the zoo, including our evening events, which we have a number of facilities that can be rented out in the evening, our summer concert series, which is consistently named the best outdoor venue for music in the Twin Cities and has grown with each year. We have group picnic activities. We have obviously partnerships with a retail and food operation, which has generated more and more revenue for the zoo each year, and even smaller activities like swan and pelican boats on our main lake, which are added revenue to our bottom line and help us help support the education and conservation work that we do. I talked about conservation, and again, we're confronting a world where wildlife, the subject of our exhibitions, are threatened in just about every continent, every state, every county that wildlife exists in. And it's our obligation to not just tell people that story, but to actively participate in activities that can save those, collect those animals. We have about 45 endangered species of wildlife in our collection. 24 of those are, actually now 25, we just added another one, are subject of what are called species survival plans, which are national or international programs set up to breed and in some cases actually reintroduce these animals to the wild. Something we've done in recent years with the trumpeter swan in partnership with the Department of Natural Resources. There are now large flocks of trumpeter swans that have been reestablished in Minnesota where they have been extinct for almost 100 years. We've also been involved in a program to reintroduce the original wild horse to Asia, and we're working on a very dynamic and innovative program to actually potentially reestablish tigers in China, working with the government and conservation groups there. So the zoo, for its 30 years, has been renowned nationally and internationally in zoo and conservation circles as a conservation leader. One of my goals since I've been at the zoo is to make sure that Minnesotans are aware of that leadership and that we can continue it as well. And we're doing that primarily through really retooling and rethinking how we exhibit our animals and how we interpret it for the public. I think when the zoo first opened, there were some complaints that, well, animals aren't hard to see here, and maybe we don't have all the animals that you might expect to see in a major zoo. And in the last few years, we've been addressing all of those issues in a pretty vigorous way with, at least initially, with fairly minimal funding, creating lots of up-close viewing opportunities where people can now get close to our tigers, which are a signature animal here at the zoo, exhibits for meerkats and small animals in our tropics that are much more interactive, much more naturalistic, but also giving people that eye-to-eye experience that becomes the memory that one takes home, which may have been missing in the early years at the zoo. Most recently, we had a temporary exhibit at the zoo last summer. It was just here for 3 months, but it addressed the question people have asked since the zoo opened, which is, where are the big African animals? We've always had plans to someday do a permanent exhibit of those critters, but it's always been a financial issue. It's very expensive to do that well. So we just brought animals in for a summer vacation, essentially, in Minnesota from other zoos, including giraffe and zebra, in a wonderful outdoor exhibit area. And we saw our attendance jump about 9% during the peak months that Africa was available to the public. So we found ways to be innovative without spending a lot of money, but we also realized that as the new zoo that's now 30 years old, there is a need for significant reinvestment in the zoo, and the state legislature has seen fit to fund that in a significant way. In the last 2 years, we've received over $30 million in bonding funds, which are being spent right now on a number of improvements at the zoo, but particularly on two what we think are going to be just signature exhibits that will be opening in the next 2 summers. The Minnesota Trail, which has always been part of the zoo, but was always a bit, shall we say, low-key and actually hard to find and not as dynamic as modern zoo exhibits can be. We're doing a complete renovation of that. It's going to be opening this coming July and will really serve as a trailhead to all of Minnesota. The parks and natural areas of the state will be celebrated, and the whole idea of going through this is to see some of the animals you might not see in nature, like a wolverine or a puma, but also to get you get our visitors to understand what great opportunities there are out there in the state to go out and observe wildlife and wild habitats. Again, we're partnering extensively with the Department of Natural Resources in that activity. And then an even larger exhibit, one that we're considering really a signature exhibit for our zoo called Russia's Grizzly Coast, is now under construction with an opening date of 2008. It will feature, as the name implies, grizzly bears, but also a whole host of other animals from the other side of the Pacific Ocean, including sea otters, wild boar, and Amur leopards. It's going to be, we think, a state-of-the-art exhibit that will have a major impact on our attendance and public perception of the zoo, and once again, on our 30th anniversary, we'll be in a position where we can call our zoo the new zoo again. So lots going on at the zoo. I'd love to share more with you, but I know, again, it's been a long day, and we want to get to the crux of the matter today, which is our operating budget request, and I'll turn it over to Peg to talk about the specifics of what's in our request, including the initiatives.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, if you look at your budget document, there are three initiatives that the governor is recommending. The first one is lottery in lieu of sales tax, and this stems from a program that the legislature passed a number of years ago that dedicates what would be sales tax dollars on the lottery tickets to environmental activities. And the bulk of the money is distributed to Fish and Wildlife, Parks and Trails, and then there are three zoos, Como, Lake Superior Zoo in Duluth, and the Minnesota Zoo, that receive 3% of the dollar amount. And it's all done by formula. The Department of Finance tells us what dollar amount to put in there. For the coming fiscal year, they're estimating it would be $137,000. $138,000 the following year. And what we do with this money is we try and put this towards our repair replacement and value. The legislature the past two sessions has been wonderful in the bonding bill and giving us asset preservation money, but there's a lot that the zoo needs to repair that isn't eligible for bond funds. It's just the general maintenance kinds of things that don't have that 20-year life. And so we've tried to take this amount of money and put it towards just keeping up those day-to-day things, the fresh coat of paint, those types of things at the zoo. The second initiative is one that you will probably see in any state agency that comes before you, and that is compensation adjustment. In the past, it was known as salary supplement. This is something that has not been recommended for a number of years. Agencies have been absorbing that within their budget. For the zoo, it's $124,000 in the first year and $251,000 in the second year. Because the zoo earns the majority of our income, it's not 2% like it is in a lot of state agencies over all of our salaries. It's just over what's appropriated. So it ends up being about a 1% increase for our salaries the first year, 1.8% the second. We're estimating that once insurance costs come in and whatever is negotiated in collective bargaining, the actual cost will probably be about 3% a year. So this would just be very helpful in helping us offset those additional costs that we see come every 2 years in the salary. The third request is $250,000 in each year of the biennium to help with our utility costs. And any of you who write out a bill, check to the utility companies, knows what the costs have increased in the past few years. At the zoo, we have 485 acres, and we have about 470,000 square feet. And we're somewhat limited in what we can do. We've done what we can as far as trying to decrease our utility costs. We entered into the zero-interest loan with the Department of Administration to install some more efficient equipment. That has now been installed. That has a payback estimate of about 8 years. So we're starting to see some results from that. Where we have areas that just house staff, we do the dial back on the thermostat, but we can't do that in our animal areas, which is a lot of the area of the zoo, because that endangers the health of the animals. So we've been trying to become more efficient, really, in all of our different utilities. Overall, if you just look at fiscal year 02 and what we paid for all of our utilities compared to fiscal 06, which was the last complete fiscal year, we've seen a dollar increase of $468,000 plus, or about 46.6% increase. And when I break that down and I look at what has our heat usage been, and I look at the therms used over that period of time and the dollars associated with that, we've really seen our therm use decrease since 02, yet our dollars have increased in what we've had to pay for that heat by about $125,000. I've looked at the total kilowatts on the electrical side. Again, the average cost per kilowatt has gone up, and so we've seen increases of close to $100,000. Gasoline, we have to, of course, snowplow and do a lot of maintenance to cover that 485 acres. Most of the driving is within the zoo complex. Occasionally, they're running out to Home Depot to pick up something. And then the Zoomobile. And there is a surcharge on Zoomobile trips if it's over 100 miles, but that still doesn't quite cover the cost of what we've seen happening with gasoline. And so looking at our gasoline usage, it's really been pretty steady between 02 and 06, but the cost has increased 41,000, which really is a position. So the zoo has been absorbing all of these increases over the past 4 or 5 years, and we've gotten to the point where it's really going to start to impact programs if we have to continue to absorb the utility increases.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee members?
I have one quick question, just regarding the energy usage you were just talking about. Do you by any chance have a report that specifically is about the measures that the zoo has undertaken to address the energy costs, and what organization, if any, other than yourself internally, have you worked with doing assessments and that sort of thing? Just curious if you have that. I don't want to take a lot of time, but if you have the document, I'd be curious to see it.
Madam Chair and Representative Saylor, we don't have a report per se, but I would be happy to put together a summary of the measures that we've taken over the past few years. I know the Department of Administration has been working on some things. Dakota Electric is our electric utility, and we have worked with them, and they've come in and done some assessments to try and come up with ideas that could help. And also in our new construction with Rush's Grizzly Coast, we're doing some exciting things. We are doing a green roof, which we hope will help with some of our water management issues, along with the monorail is going to go right over the exhibit, and so we'll be able to interpret that. And we're also doing, there's an education building as part of the exhibit, and that will be geothermal, which in when you're trying to retrofit isn't necessarily cost effective, but in new construction and the way that we've got this one, it's surrounded. It really makes it an efficient way. But I would be happy to put a one-page summary together.
Thank you.
Yeah. Madam Chair, other than that, I know when I was here when the zoo was born on the Florida, it took about as long as today's discussion. Probably longer. Anyway, but I know that in the 70s we didn't have, energy. We weren't thinking about energy because it was cheap. Well, later on it got bad, but do you have any solar or any alternative there? I suppose it was built in the 70s. So.
Madam Chair, Representative Garles, actually when the zoo was first built, the very early versions of photovoltaic panels were just being invented, and there were some that were established at the zoo. They were essentially basically hot water heaters that were solar heated, and they were inefficient and ineffective, and so those have been removed. But as Peg mentioned, with some of our new construction, we are looking at alternative sources, the geothermal heating, using the groundwater for this new building. And I think a lot of the zoo was built with some consideration for energy by having berms and sheltered, earth-sheltered buildings and the like, which was sort of in vogue in the 70s. And we continue to do that partly because we don't want the zoo to be full of buildings. We want it to be a landscape with animals and plants. So I think the original building, certainly things have progressed since that time, and but there were, even at that time, the idea was to develop an environmentally responsible facility, and we just have better technology we can apply with our new buildings today.
And Madam Chair and Representative Yaros, we're looking at replacing some very, very old, outdated vehicles, and the new vehicles that we're purchasing that you can get, we are getting at for E85 fuel.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think what I'm hearing you say, though, is that your request coincides with the governor's recommendation at this point.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, yes.
And you, if I remember, you had a bonding request for the wastewater. That's in a separate track.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, yes. We are one of the governor's 8 recommendations for a capital budget project. It is to address an inflow infiltration problem at our water discharges to the city of Egan, and it's a program at the Met Council. And I do have a kind of page and a half handout that I do have to read.
I just brought it up, Madam Chair, because it is a separation project that needs to be done, and so it's in the hopper, and this committee is supposed to be there.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Anyone else? I can just tell you, as a many-year member and my children are volunteers at the zoo, we're just delighted with the work you've done, and I can't wait to see the grizzly exhibit. You know I'm very excited about that, so thank you very, very much for coming today.
Thank
you. Okay, next we have the Minnesota Arts Board. If you can state your name for the tape, and then we'll hear your testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Tom Prohl, and I am the interim executive director of the Minnesota State Arts Board. I've been in the job about 3 months now. So I'm here to present you with our budget, our reaction to the governor's budget, and also give you some information about us. I know all of you have had the opportunity to receive and hopefully review information specifically to your districts through the Arts Board, what the service that has been provided through the Arts Board. I just want to say that the state of Minnesota was one of the first states in the United States to adopt an Arts Council. 1903 was the first year of our Arts Council. And I think if you look at your there's a handout here with lovely facts and figures, which I won't go through in detail. I'll let you do that. But if you want to start on page 2, 92% or 94% of Minnesotans believe that the arts are important and that cultural activities make Minnesota a more attractive place to live and to work. As you go through, you can just 67% on page 3 of Minnesotans participated in arts activity within the last year. Page 4, 95% of Minnesotans believe that the arts are important or essential part of the overall education of children. And 82% of Minnesotans believe that the arts, that funding, public funding for the arts and for cultural activities, help to make them affordable and accessible to all Minnesotans. I think you can see our mission is very simple. We exist to provide and make sure that all Minnesotans have the opportunity to participate in the arts. We are present in every county of the state. We have 11 regional arts councils that help us to distribute the monies throughout the state. They are listed on page 7 of your packet. I'm moving through this quickly so we don't have to stay here all night. So if I seem a little scattered, I'm just trying to get you out of here. So.
Thank you.
So if we look at the snapshot of the state appropriations history, which goes to on page 8, you can see this is about a 10-year study. Beginning with the biennium of 98-99, the State Arts Board received about $28 million per biennium, and that was the high point for three biennium. You can see during the fiscal crisis of 2003, our appropriation was cut drastically, more than 32%. Of that 32% cut, 60% was cut out of our administrative budget. We lost more than half of our staff, and a lot of our programs were eliminated or combined in order for us to continue to serve the arts community. We have a staff of nine, actually, full-time equivalents right now from a high of 21. But we still have all of the programs that we're doing, obviously with less money, but we do serve a number of people. If you look on page 9, you can see that the governor's appropriation gives you a quick comparison of our current fiscal year, which is column 1, compared to the governor's recommendation, which is the center column, and then against the actual, which was fiscal year 2002-2003, which was prior to the fiscal crisis. We're very pleased that the governor has proposed an appropriation of $18.2 million for the biennium out of his $34.4 billion budget for 2008 and 2009. If you look at it as if you look at what it represents as an investment to the state of Minnesota, it's about 5 cents for every $100 the state spends goes to the arts. So what we do with this appropriation, you can see that it's broken down into three different different areas. The regional arts councils are the 11 regional arts councils throughout the state where the money goes directly to those to pass on to local and regional interests and groups. The Arts Board grants, which we manage directly through the Arts Board, which are for institutional support throughout the state for individual artists throughout the state and for our arts and education programs. And then the Arts Board Operations and Services, which the majority of that is salaries, obviously. But there are some expenses in there for us to manage the services and technical assistance programs that we do to help grantees fill out their applications, et cetera. So approximately two-thirds of the appropriation is spent directly on grants that produce or present the arts, grants to individual artists, and grants to schools or organizations. If you look on page, which is the next page, which shows you where they go, if you look on the Arts Board requests and grants on page 11, you can see that the in fiscal year 2006, the Arts Board received 524 applications requesting more than $12 million. In grants, and we were able to make 320 grants totaling just under $6 million, or roughly half. So there is a huge demand for the money out there. And these grants go to organizations such as the Center for the Arts in Fergus Falls, the Dasko-Cocato High School, Duluth Superior Symphony Orchestra, Faustin Library Arts Center, East Metro Music Academy in St. Paul, Mixed Blood Theater in Minneapolis, the Weissman in Minneapolis, and Wildwood Art Series in Stillwater. So, as you can see, they cover a wide variety of disciplines and areas throughout the state. The Arts Board Operations and Services, which is on page 12, just kind of gives you a very basic overview of what we do. The workshops and technical assistance, percent for art in public places, which is actually a program of the Department of Administration that we manage for them and administer. The cultural tourism, which is we do in conjunction with the Department of Tourism. The art of recovery, which is a program for people recovering from crimes that use art to help them with their recovery. We just had a panel on that today, actually. Poetry Out Loud, which is a national initiative funded through the National Endowment for the Arts, which is a recitation of poetry through high school students, and there is actually on Saturday, the 3rd of March at 10:30 a.m. at the Rotunda, there is the final state finals, so you're all invited to come. And then we have a roster of teaching artists in training, and we have ADA and accessibility consultants and assistants. The Regional Arts Council's block grants, which are basically distributed by population, is how they're more or less distributed. These monies go directly to the Regional Arts Councils, and they are distributed through their grant programs, and they all have independent boards of directors that make those determinations of where those monies go so that it specifically meets the needs of each of the localities and the regions. So those monies are basically we are a conduit for those monies. They go directly to the regions to do with what they are best at doing, and specifically filling the needs of those institutions. So in summary, I just wanted to, you know, the arts are a very blue chip investment to the state. We return a huge our return on investment is huge. During the 2004-2005 biennium, the Arts Board and Minnesota's Regional Arts Councils awarded just under $16 million to 2,348 Minnesota artists, arts organizations, and arts and education programs. Together, these activities served a combined audience of nearly 18 million people, nearly four times the population of the state. And the return on the investment is in excess of $1 billion per year for the $8 million currently being distributed, being granted to us or appropriated to us. So that's my presentation. So we are we're very happy with the governor's proposed budget. We think it's a step in the right direction for restoration of our funds. And we feel that with the return on investment that we currently have, the more you invest in us, the bigger the return. So, are there any questions? Be happy to take
yes.
them.
Yes, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I know the answer to the question, that's why I'm going to ask it. Any relationship you have with the Walker, Minneapolis Institute of Art, Minneapolis School of Art and Design, just so I think people need to understand, are you affiliated or attached to them in any way?
We're not. The only affiliation we have is that we are a grantee. They are a grantee of ours. They apply for operating support. They are given through formula funds and through merit funds through our institutional grant organization or grant program. They are reviewed by a panel, mm-hmm. and they are funded general operating support only. We do not do any. That's one thing that the Arts Board does not do. We do not get involved in projects. Specifically, we fund the general operations to keep it at the least controversial as we can.
Is that? Representative Saylor?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a couple of questions for you. One of which, going back to page 8, just looking at your graphs. And my question was with regard to the operations and services. Does that the yellow segment there, does that include operations and services at the regions as well, or are there operating budgets included in that purple segment that says regional arts councils?
Madam Chair, yes. Representative, they are in the regional arts councils. Most of those places, most of those organizations have one person or two people administering, but that is all of their monies are in there. They also have, of their appropriation, they also have additional monies that are distributed through the McKnight Foundation through Art for Artists Initiative grants that also help to pay for some of their administrative expenses. But this is specifically, yeah, all of their administration is paid for out of their appropriation.
Thank you. And I know that they always struggle with that quite a bit to figure out how to cover those basic turning on the lights issues. And I just wasn't sure how much of that was covered. It seems like it's quite enough. But I just was curious how that went. I also have a question on page 12, just revisiting, because I think I didn't hear you properly. On that art of recovery, is that crime victims, crime perpetrators, or both?
Madam Chair, Representative, it's crime victims, victims of crime. And then there will be a show of their work. Most of it is visual and some literary poems, poetry, writing. There will be a show at the State Arts Board offices during the art crawl, so you can see those works. They're quite stunning, actually.
Does that... Will that show, does that encompass the whole state, or is that just from certain programs, say in the metro area or with a certain population in certain parts of the state, or is it statewide?
Madam Chair, it is statewide. And it's they apply for, they actually send their applications in, and they're recruited through different methods. And I can get you the specifics.
Okay.
I will get you the specifics.
I have one more question. I didn't want them to feel like just because they're at the end of the day that they wouldn't get, you know.
I'm sure they appreciate
I'm
that.
Sure
thank you.
Anyway, and you sort of answered this question already on page 13, looking at the block grants. I was curious how they were determined. You said population. Presumably that's population of the residents living there, or does the population of artists living in there making requests have anything to do with that?
Madam Chair. Representative, that is actually based on the population of those regions of living there, the people who live there. If you look at how our granting is done, these are grants that are made generally to smaller organizations, none of these are individual artist grants. Individual artist grants all go through the Minnesota State Arts Board grant lines. These are all to small institutions and arts and education programs. The regional arts councils, most of their, if they have an individual artist grant, they go through a separate funding through the McKnight Foundation. So if you look at the monies that are distributed directly to the Minnesota State Arts Board, those individual artists come from all over the state. So if you really look at where the money goes, it goes everywhere. I mean, even the big money that comes, quote-unquote, the big money that comes to the State Arts Board for grants for the grantees goes back out. It serves more of the state than anything else. And I have some figures on that, too. I can give you some specifics on where the individual artists come from, because they're from every region.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Okay, next we have Larry Redman from the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I'm going to be brief. It's been a long day, and if it's any insurance to you, like you, I've been here all day, too. So it's I also have incentive to be concise. I represent Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, which is not the state agency, and so I particularly appreciate your indulgence this evening. We represent all the arts organizations throughout the whole state that are in every county. There are 1,500 of them in Minnesota. This is one of the most arts organization populated states in the nation. Minnesota is extraordinary, and it's not something that's just in the Twin Cities. It's something, as I said before, that's in every single county. In fact, about over 60% of all the arts organizations are outside of the Seven County metro area, something that people don't always understand. Their size varies greatly from very small organizations with very small budgets, funded and supported primarily by the regional arts councils, to really some major international organizations Representative Peterson made reference to, among others, that are significant symbols of the state, but also important resources to the education of our population, so forth. The reason that I wanted to take just a couple of minutes to speak tonight was because we're very, very pleased with the Arts Board's budget request. In fact, frankly, and with all due respect, we think, frankly, it's a little too small. We are very aware however, of the limited resources that the state legislature has to work. You know that money has been shrinking that was available. So I don't want to sound naive or, you know, I've been here many, many years, and I'm very aware of the lack of resource that is there. But we wanted to stress this activity is unusual activity in that it is overwhelmingly funded by the private sector. Most of the money that funds the activities that all these organizations, these 1,500 groups that are throughout the state, 1,000, by the way, which receive some kind of funding as a result of state legislative action, comes from the population, people writing checks, people doing volunteer work. The state contribution, which varies in small organizations to 10-20%, but to large organizations, 1 or 2%, in every case, it is usually the largest single gift that any of these organizations receive. It's absolutely essential for these organizations for, one, making sure that there's access to the widest portion of the population possible, which is something deep, deep within the mission of these groups. Secondly, it's extremely important to their funding stability. Like any charitable organizations, the stability of contributions coming in is enormously important to their ability to plan. And quite frankly, it's also quite significant to our ability to go to the private sector and be able to further leverage it in order to attract more dollars. Over the years, that's something that the arts organization has done as a result of funding that the legislature and the governor have created to the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils, and something we need to continue. In the last major budget process, however, and this kind of puts the fine point on why I'm here, and again, I don't mean to sound in any way negative or anything, because we're very grateful for all the help that's received. But when the $4.5 billion shortfall hit the state a few years ago, the arts suffered, as did all of state government. And there's no one in these halls that doesn't know that there were innumerable programs in all parts of state government, Minnesota life, that suffered as a result of that. When that budget shortfall came, which was roughly about 14% of the total state operating budget, the arts immediately came forward to the leadership with the governor's office and the leadership of both parties in both the House and Senate, and we said, we want you to know that we think we're absolutely vital to the people of our state, but we also want you to know we don't think we're special. We don't think that we somehow are not subject to budget cuts that you have to deal with. We're sensitive to a very, very difficult problem. What we'd ask is that the State Arts Board, being a small agency, be treated in some kind of fair way in terms of those budget cuts. And frankly, we were bold enough to suggest that that ought to be in proportion to what the budget shortfall was, something around the 14% number. Instead, we ended up with a 32% number. Actually, originally a 40% cut is what was proposed by the governor in that year. That came down to a 32% cut at the end. And I don't want to poo-poo the significance of these dollars, but I know in the total $35 billion operating budget of the state, these dollars were relatively small. But the reason I'm here tonight is that these numbers were gigantic in terms of what they did to the recipient organizations who I represent. And that's why I wanted to make that message to you tonight. It doesn't matter if it's our state's largest arts organization, the Minnesota Orchestra, or the smallest arts organization, in Warren, Minnesota. Every one of these groups, as a result of this, had substantial budget cuts. It hurt their ability to create the access that I mentioned before. It hurt their ability in regards to stability. And it also, frankly, hurt us in terms of our being able to attract private dollars to come forward. It's a story that's absolutely true everywhere. Again, I never want to give the suggestion that we didn't believe that cuts needed to be made. We did. We brought that immediately. But frankly, with all due respect to the prior legislature and the governor made that budget, we think that those cuts were beyond what really was necessary to make that point. We're pleased that Governor Pawlenty proposed $1 million for the biennium increase. We think, as Mr. Prowl said, that's a good step forward. But it's still a long distance from the numbers that we cut before. We know that your resources are very limited. We understand that that's a reality that you have to deal with, as everybody does. But as you go through these extremely difficult weeks in terms of trying to sort that out, we'd ask you to remember that when you're appropriating money to the state arts agency, the state arts board, this is literally ending up right in your district in a very significant way. And the arts don't think they're special, but we think we are a very important part of the state life, and we'd ask your indulgence to help us in that consideration. Thank you, Madam Chair. If I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Well, before you go, I just want to let you know that I personally think the arts are special. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your patience.
Okay, I guess we did not have approval of the minutes. So if somebody could please.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Moved by Representative Aiken. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 The minutes are accepted, and other than that, I guess we can move to adjourn.
Thank you. I was just going to say, these books, it's really nice to have these books. We used to have these huge ones, so make sure that we, have them here if you want to take them. And, I don't know how the supply is, Diogo.
I only have one for every person on the committee, so if you take it, just make sure you bring it back.
Well, they won't give us any more? Well, thank you for the staff. I assume you guys did this, is that right? Who did it?
I don't know. The book came to me. I just copied it.
Oh, great. Super.
But I will take credit.
Super. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, if you want beer, I'm going to be at the Kelly. Sorry. Thank you very much for your patience and coming. Excellent attendance. I really appreciate it.
Long day.
The people, our guests appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.